Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country.
Democrats crowing after major victories in New Jersey, New York City, and Virginia last night. CBS's Allison Keyes.
It started in Virginia, where CBS News projects that Abigail Spanberger is the Commonwealth's first female governor.
Virginia, I cannot wait to get to work for you.
Then in New Jersey, CBS News is projecting Mikey Sherrill as the new governor.
I am determined to build prosperity.
In New York City, CBS News projects the Democratic nominee Zohran Mamdani is the new mayor.
In California, voters also approved a measure that will redraw the state's districts to favor Democrats. That is to blunt similar actions Republican-led states around the country have been taking. An upset in St. Paul, where challenger State Representative Kali Herr defeated two-term incumbent Melvin Carter. And at the same time, making history as that city's first female and first Hmong mayor.
I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. And today we're talking elections. I mean, how could we not?
Come January 1st, we'll be calling him Mayor Mamdani. 34-year-old Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani has made history as the youngest person and the first Muslim to lead New York City. He won the race with just over 50% of the vote, compared to just over 41% for Andrew Cuomo, around 7% for Curtis Sliwa. Our Amanda Alexander in the 1010 Winds newsroom with more.
The energy electric at Zohran Mamdani's headquarters.
I'm just so proud that he's our mayor.
That was incredible.
Amazing.
We love Mamdani.
The mayor-elect secured over a million votes in the race. He then thanks New Yorkers in a speech.
To every New Yorker, whether you voted for me, for one of my opponents, or felt too disappointed by politics to vote at all, thank you for the opportunity to prove myself worthy of your trust.
Mamdani also addressing President Trump in just four words.
Turn the volume up.
The president posting cryptically on Truth Social, quote, "And so it begins."
In his concession speech, former Governor Andrew Cuomo called the race the right fight to have waged.
He called his campaign one of unity for the future of the city and the country.
Because we fought our hearts out and we left it all on the field.
This supporter says the mayoral race is a warning.
I hope people wake up to do something about the DSA for the next mayoral election in 4 years and for the rest of the country.
But that remains to be seen.
Republican Curtis Sliwa with this warning for the mayor-elect.
If you try to implement socialism, if you try to render our police weak and impotent, if you forsake the people's public safety, we're not only organizing, but we are mobilizing, and we will become the mayor-elect and his supporters' worst enemies.
While the gap closed in the final days of the campaign, New York Law School political analyst Ben Max tells 1010 Winds the Mamdani campaign did a good job of staving off Cuomo in particular.
He expanded his map, brought in more voters who had stuck with Andrew Cuomo in the primary, like many black voters in the city who moved to Mamdani. And so he's going to enter office in City Hall with a very big to-do list and a lot of wind at his back, but a lot of challenges.
Including needing Albany to get much of his affordability agenda done, as well as any challenges that come from President Trump, who has threatened to both cut funding to New York and send in the National Guard to help fight crime. A couple of governor's races were making big headlines, one across the Hudson, where despite what looked like it would be a photo finish, It was a clear victory for Democrat Mikey Sherrill in the race against Republican Jack Chitarelli.
This was a tough, hard-fought race getting national attention that turned out in the end to not be very close.
Moments ago, I called and congratulated Mikey Sherrill and gave her my very best wishes.
Republican Jack Chitarelli conceding, and now Mikey Sherrill is Jersey's 57th governor.
And this is a tough state, but I know you, New Jersey.
When it comes to what the pundits were watching last night, it all came down to a handful of bellwether races and issues. Those included the election of a self-described Democratic Socialist mayor in New York, the election of Democratic governors in New Jersey and Virginia, election of judges in Pennsylvania, and redistricting efforts in California. All of that fell in favor of the Democrats, including a very important proposition in California, where voters easily approved a ballot measure to redraw the state's congressional map to favor Democrats. The AP reported that marked the party's biggest victory to date in a national battle over redistricting ahead of the 2026 midterms. Proposition 50 will replace lines drawn by an independent commission with a map that could net Democrats as many as 5 new seats in next year's U.S. House elections. That came on the heels of new GOP-friendly maps enacted after approval by the state legislatures in Texas, Missouri, and North Carolina. Here's more on the Democrats' big night from Newell Normand at WWL Radio in New Orleans.
Welcome back, folks. Democrats sweep big elections in multiple states last evening. But what does us all mean? They were all blue states. And here to talk to us about it is John Cuvion, political analyst, pollster, and founder of JMC Analytics and Polling. John, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on your show today.
So, John, let's talk globally. Or what do you glean from last night's results?
Well, I would say almost unequivocally, it was a very heavily Democratic night, almost at the scale of 2018 or 2008, based on the detailed data I saw in multiple states.
Meaning, what exactly would you remind the general public about what happened in 08 and 18?
Sure. So basically, those are the most recent Democratic landslide years. 1982 is the only other one that comes to mind. And when I'm saying the term landslide, let me explain for the benefit of your listeners. What I'm talking about is broad and or massive Democratic gains and or wins in various races across the country. So the Republicans had a relatively good off year in 2021 when the focus was on not only President Biden's botched Afghanistan withdrawal, but the COVID restrictions, which were harsher in Democratic-run states, which not only caused the governorship of Virginia to flip to the Republicans, but the Democratic incumbent in New Jersey very nearly lost. And so it was a much more Republican environment, just using those specific examples, even though there are more. Well, I saw the exact opposite last night in terms of double-digit Democratic wins up and down the board. And there's reasons for that, of course, which will be the follow-up questions on your show.
Exactly. So that's the outcome, the what. Yes. Have you been looking at the why?
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused,
is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, and I have a couple theories about that. So the first thing you have to appreciate is anytime you have a party in power, particularly if they are very aggressive with pursuing their agenda, the out party, of course, is going to be more motivated to vote because they're shut out of power, which is the case for the Democrats right now. They do not control the House, nor do they control the Senate or the presidency. But the other part of this, which I think cannot be discounted, particularly in Virginia, so in the fifth week of a government shutdown, the government shutdown back on October 1st to me was more theoretical because it had just started. There was no economic impact. Well, a month later, now you're starting to have people getting furloughed and or their paychecks are not coming, and they're starting to wonder, you know, how they could feed their families, make their mortgage payments and so forth. And they take that anger out on the party in power. In a state like Virginia, which has an overlarge dependence on the government, that hit very hard against the Republicans, where not only did Democrats go 3-for-3 in the statewide races, they picked up 13 seats in the state house in marginal districts. And so there was these broad Democratic wins that were especially strong in Virginia, in my opinion, for reasons of the shutdown.
I was not surprised by the outcome. I was surprised by the margin.
Yeah. Well, and what I'm thinking is happening, too. So you have angry, motivated Democrats. And one of the things that immediately caught my attention yesterday afternoon, normally in today's voting, mail-in voters tend to be more Democratic, and in Election Day voters are more Republicans. So Republicans normally count on this cushion of Election Day votes. I was not seeing that happen when I was looking at the county by county in Virginia and New Jersey yesterday. And I'm thinking, okay, since the pain points of the government shutdown have probably started hitting a few days ago, there's probably that sense of urgency, if you did not early vote, to show up on Election Day and vote blue.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. I was watching, flipping through all the channels last evening, and a lot of exit polling done, you know, asking voters, why this, why that. The issues that they allegedly are the most concerned about really aligned with the Republican candidate more than it did the Democrat candidate, but they ended up voting for the Democrat candidate, which was an interesting phenomenon to me, because you tend to vote what's in your own best self-interest, right?
Yes. Well, you know, if by issues you're talking about is, I guess, economic anxiety, for lack of a better term, the thing about the government shutdown, which I think makes it particularly painful, is you start having all these little tangential things that affect your daily life. I mean, let's pretend you live in Jefferson or Orleans Parish and you want to get a new flood insurance policy. Well, good luck with that, because, you know, the NFIP is not perceived to be essential enough. And so there's all those kinds of micro examples where not having a government that's open is impeding your ability to, you know, do business or have a life. And I think that's what people are reacting to or against.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the same time, a lot of the motivation for folks was not necessarily a vote for or against the particular candidate. They were really skewed numbers relative to the motivation of being anti-Trump.
Yes. And, you know, I would describe that more simply as kind of a primal scream, because a perfect example of that in Virginia, where you had the Democratic candidate had basically made wisecracks through text messages about, you know, killing some legislator and or his children. And normally that kind of thing would torpedo your candidacy, but I think Democrats or middle-of-the-road voters were so mad at Trump and the Republicans for this and that yesterday, they just decided that, you know, some remark made 3 years ago didn't matter relative to, you know, their anger at Trump and the Republicans.
I don't know that the vitriol that's out there today is moving voters one way or the other. It's almost as if they have been desensitized to it. And I don't know if there are statements crazy enough to really move a Republican to a Democrat or a Democrat to a Republican.
I mean, to tell you the truth, nowadays, I'm kind of the opinion that tribalism has become so strong. In other words, you see the world through your own filter of red or blue, and you dismiss opposite information. There's probably not that many persuadable voters. And when you talk about an off-year election like Virginia, New Jersey, where you're talking about lower turnout than a presidential, you're basically talking about those harder core voters being the ones who actually show up like they did yesterday.
And one thing that seems to be consistent across all these states is that when Trump's on the ballot, it's a whole different story. I mean, the way that he monopolizes news cycles, the way that he feeds the information to the voters and everything else is one thing. You don't find that same saturation point when he's simply endorsing a candidate. And you can't rely. I never relied on endorsements. You still got to go do something out there because it really is not going to. The transferability of votes, I think, has been long gone for over a decade, in my view.
Yeah. Well, one thing, too, when you're talking about the power of Trump or not, with politics, there's always an upside and a downside to things. So, in other words, if now your party has more, you know, less educated, more downscale, less politically attuned voters, well, there's certainly the numbers for that. The problem is if they don't vote, it's very hard to push, pull and shove them to the polls in a non-presidential race and or Trump not being on the ballot.
And I think a lot of people didn't. You have to have something at stake, right?
Yeah.
I'm not so certain that the Republicans ever really framed that messaging very well. I think it was a little scattered in its approach. It wasn't as laser focused as it needed to be. But that's a challenge when you're in a blue state anyway, right?
It is. The thing about it is when you're talking about a blue state, what really matters in that instance becomes the independent and or the occasionally Democratic voters. And those groups went heavily towards the Democrats yesterday, and that's why, you know, perfect example, you saw 13 state House seats in Virginia in 50-50 districts flip to the Democrats, whereas they were once held by Republicans. So I'm always of the opinion that the middle does matter, even if it is a shrinking percentage.
Yeah, no doubt in these close elections. And those elections, correct me if I'm wrong, the margins weren't anywhere near as wide as what we saw with the statewides, right?
And actually what was interesting about Virginia and New Jersey, by the way, both of them went for an identical 52-46 for Harris. So it's in their own way, Virginia and New Jersey were kind of carbon copies of each other, even though in the case of Virginia, you have more federal employees. In the case of New Jersey, it's more blue-collarish and minority, and, of course, more Northeastern than Virginia is.
Let's pivot to the New York mayor's race, which to me was very interesting.
New York is one of these cases where there were some structural problems from the beginning that allowed Mamdani to win. The first is the moment he got nominated and Cuomo refused to exit stage left. And so now he's fighting for votes that perhaps could have gone to the Republican who got about 10%. So when you have two people battling it out for the same vote, as I always like to say, there's Democratic votes to spare in New York City, just like there are in New Orleans. And so basically they were fighting for a static share of the pie. And plus Cuomo is not exactly the quote unquote independent nominee was not exactly a likable guy. And so I think that Mamdani, besides having split opposition, he kind of snuck in because he was very sunny and optimistic. And I think a lot of people weren't really paying attention to, you know, what he's saying versus what he could accomplish or what is even possible.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how this is going to work out. And it'll be interesting also to see what impact it'll have on the midterms. Because when you talk about these things that he wants, everything's free, right? And then we're going to tax the wealthy even more, that if you live in New York, I think you're paying about 58% of your income in taxes now with local, state, and federal income taxes.
Yeah.
I don't know what the capacity is, you know. And
yeah.
He wants to raise the city corporate income tax rate from 7.25% to 11.5%. That's a big jump. And a 2% tax on incomes above $1 million, which is another, it's on top of what they're already paying. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what ultimately happens here.
Despite there being a Democratic Socialist elected mayor of New York, I think there'll be some goal lines of defense that'll prevent him from getting what he wants accomplished. Those goal lines are New York City Council and the Democratic governor of New York. Number three, I think that Republicans do need to be concerned going into the midterms based on the sheer immensity of the Democratic victories last night from coast to coast.
So let me ask you about the economy. I mean, obviously, the common thread seems to be affordability. You know, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, says that the best is yet to come looking forward into Q1, Q2 of 2026. Will that do it in and of itself? Because I have my reservation.
Well, the core problem is lingering inflation. And when it comes to the economy, as John Cougar Mellencamp once said, no good deed goes unpunished. In other words, you as an incumbent party get punished for having a bad economy, but you don't get a requisite amount of credit if things are going well. So it's right. Kind of a case of you're kind of playing, I guess, a little bit of defense here where you just want to make sure that you can get interest rates and or inflation down in time for the midterms.
John Cuvione, as always, we appreciate your time.
Welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. And if you're looking at election results from last night, Proposition 50 in California passes. They want to redistrict, and heavily so for the Democrats in California. Mamdani takes New York. Democrats take New Jersey. Democrats take Virginia. It was a night where Democrats are celebrating. They're saying, see, this is what we've been telling you. From the ashes of New York, can an AOC rise? That's the question now. What happens next? And joining us is Vice President of Strategic Communications at the Heritage Foundation, Mary Vaught. So what do you think is the logical next steps for the Democrat Party, who are out there celebrating today's?
Most of the Democrat candidates chose to run against Donald Trump, and that's the reality of it. They don't like Donald Trump. They don't like the policies that he's implementing. And, you know, Jay Jones, the attorney general candidate in Virginia, the top cop that said he would shoot his political opponent and his kids in the head, his entire debate performance was about prosecuting Donald Trump and using the office of the AG to go after Donald Trump. So that's what they're focused on. And they're trying to tap into individuals that are upset with his presidency.
I feel like once reality sets in and the disaster could be waiting for them in New York City, I feel like the socialists are going to turn on him when they realize that all the free things that they thought they were going to get.
Hopefully the realization that these socialist policies actually hurt Americans and families will happen sooner rather than later. It's pretty disconcerting. I mean, in New York City, such a powerhouse financial city, to have someone that wants to redistribute wealth, free housing, just wants to open the doors to immigrants and all these this ideology, it's absolutely frightening.
Tell you what the game plan that the Democrats have been pretty effective at in recent months. So you have the government shut down. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's the Republicans and they want to destroy this and they want to, you know, have your prices. They want to do all that. So Republicans, they got to find a way to get a better message out there.
I think you're absolutely spot on.
So it was a big win for the Democrats. Is anyone wondering why? President Trump took to social media to say it was because he wasn't on the ballot. But there's also the shutdown that's now become the longest in American history. Here's WCCO in Minneapolis with more.
Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is sounding the alarm about travel at the nation's airports.
You will see mass flight delays, you'll see mass cancellations, and you may see us close certain parts of the airspace because we just cannot manage it because we don't have the air traffic controllers.
Meanwhile, millions of Americans who rely on food stamp assistance are still unsure when they'll get their benefits.
Trump also won, as many experts will tell you, based on his promises about the economy. Here's the latest on those numbers with WWL.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Government still shut down. What effect has that had on the economy? Well, let's talk to Mark Hamrick, try to figure it out, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Doing well, Tommy. Good morning, sir.
Happy second government 36-day shutdown, however we would celebrate this, if there's anything in the world to celebrate. Do you see this ending anytime soon, or do you see how it ends?
I think it'll be a lot like what happened last time, mm-hmm. in the sense that it was really where we saw air traffic coming under significant pressure, and that is essentially a proxy for commerce in this country. It's obviously a very important industry. It's important for the metro area where you reside, and and not to mention that, frankly, members of Congress do tend to be rather protective of their own interests, and if they can't get home to their own districts, and for crying out loud, get out of the nation's capital for a weekend, that's where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's probably right, Mark. Let's talk about what kind of data blackout has been happening during the shutdown.
Well, this Friday would typically be the day that we get the monthly employment report, and now this will be two straight months where we don't get what has historically been regarded as the most important set of data that is released in a given month. That comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, or the Labor Department. This is when we talk about the unemployment rate, the number of jobs added or lost. And we don't have that. We will, in about an hour or so, get a report from the private sector with ADP that will tell us about what their snapshot of the job market represents, and we'll be able to slice and dice that as per usual. But it's not just the job market. It's the inflation reads, the consumer price index, the producer price index. It's construction spending. It's a whole host of reports that we get from the government that Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell referenced as really being the gold standard for statistical data. That's not, of course, the most consequential aspect of all this. There are broad aspects that where we've lived in an era where trust in institutions has been plummeting. Congress is basically at the bottom of the list of institutions when people are asked about its trustworthiness, and this certainly further does damage there. Yes, there are people who will look at this as more of a finger to point toward one party or the other, but we've been through these before where one party's in control and yet it still happens. And obviously we went through an election yesterday. People will make of that what they will, but it is broadly hurtful for the economy when the government is shut down for more than a month.
So no jobs report 2 months in a row. Has that happened before? And what is going to be the effect of that?
It has not happened before. One of my colleagues reminded me, and I had frankly forgotten, that when we had the shutdown in 2018 through early 2019, 35 days, the Labor Department actually did release a jobs report. Mm-hmm. So this is unprecedented in the sense of the statistical blackout, if you want to call it that. What is the impact? Well, it lends to further uncertainty because we don't have the measures. We do have other things we can look at, as I mentioned, ADP right. being one. We can see the state collective reports on where unemployment claims are. That's typically aggregated by Labor Department every Thursday. And some Wall Street brokerage economists have been doing that work. And essentially, they look relatively firm, meaning we've not seen a substantial weakening or a large pickup in the number of people filing for unemployment benefits. The Federal Reserve obviously cut interest rates recently, despite the fact that we have not had the statistical data, because it has what it might regard, or as officials regard, as sufficient data to make their decision. But, you know, we think about the fact that the economy has been at a kind of a tipping point now anyway, in the sense of consumers are sort of buckling under the pressure of the continued pummeling they're getting with, you know, inflation being persistent and prices continuing to go up. And you have all kinds of CEOs saying, yeah, we're seeing where consumers are cutting back, not spending where they did before. We have also very much a wealth divide in this country, where the wealthiest 10% of individuals account for about 50% of the spending. That's not a good dynamic either. And so we'll see how we fare here through the final months and weeks of the year, obviously speaking on the 5th of November. So, you know, we've got about half of a quarter left. But this will subtract from economic activity or growth in the current quarter. Typically, you do get some restoration of that once the shutdown is resolved. And not only do I hope, but I have a sense that I think we may be in the final week or so of this, or that's certainly my prayer.
Yeah, well, I was watching the transportation secretary yesterday warning of, I think, to paraphrase, basically saying there would be chaos unexpected. It's just hard to predict where the chaos is going to happen. And I think your point about when the Congress people can't get on their flights to get home, that's when they start taking it seriously. We'll talk when we come back about this quote I'm reading here. With job growth cooling and unemployment expected to edge up, workers may witness further signs that the robust job market they experienced during the past few years is in a rearview mirror. Do you know who said that?
I'll take a cue from you on that. How about that?
That was said by Mark Hamrick, Bankrate senior economic analyst, and he'll expand. What makes you say that, Mark, and what does that look like for people as they head into 2026?
Tommy, in recent months, I would have described the job market as sort of a no hire, no fire job market, where the number of people added was essentially going to almost statistically insignificant levels. We still hire roughly 5 million people a month in this country, but the job growth just hasn't been there. That's been seen in the Labor Department readings, and we've seen anecdotally now more people being laid off. So I've been sort of thinking of rephrasing this as opposed to a no fire, no hire, more along the lines of a yes fire, no hire job market. And we'll see whether this is a trend or whether it's a bit of a blip. But, you know, there's all kinds of reporting out there that indicates that it's a longer search times for people who are looking for work. There is just some rising anxiety, as indicated through surveys on consumer sentiment or consumer confidence in terms of just the job market alone. And, you know, we haven't even talked about tariffs during this conversation. Mm-hmm. And we know what the impact of that is. It is to put pressure on economic growth. And also we have inflation that has been persistent.
So what do you think as of right now, 2026, I'm going way back. What do you think 2026 is going to look like?
I think that, first of all, the Federal Reserve has obviously cut interest rates twice in a row. We'll see whether they do so again in December. I think we're going to have persistent inflation. And what I will do is lean on the quarterly economist survey that my colleague Sarah Foster wrote about that I produce once a quarter at Bankrate, where they said that inflation will not return to the Fed's 2% target essentially in the next 2 years. It will remain elevated, that we'll see the unemployment rate probably rise up into the mid 4% range through the middle part or the third quarter of next year, and then we will see hiring slow. So that isn't a recession. They put the odds of a recession over the next 12 months at roughly 4 in 10, and that's what the economists think, and that's roughly parallel to what the Federal Reserve Reserve's own forecast through their summary of economic projections has indicated. One of the reports that we missed last week was third quarter GDP, and the consensus among economists was an annualized increase there of 3%. That's pretty good. We had a contraction in the first quarter, a rebound in the second quarter. All of that was because of distortions related to tariffs and imports. For the full year, the Fed looks for growth to come in under the annual average, roughly below 2%. And so that's sort of where we stand with things. And we may see a rebound next year, or we could see subpar growth again in 26. And of course, we're saying all this basically a year ahead of midterm elections. So it's not just consequential, the performance of the economy for Americans, but with the president not getting high ratings on his stewardship of the economy based on the poll data that we see, not to mention the poor showing by Republicans in the elections yesterday, admittedly not necessarily a sample for the country as a whole. I think the Republicans are going to be under pressure to do something about the economy, and it remains to be seen whether they do.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.